The trio is back, not quite live, but certainly in person at the Damen Salon at the Germanic American Institute on Summit. This is season 3, episode 15. We get to introduce new team members to you. Then we'll go down what might just shape up to be a little bit of a battle of grammar versus task-based learning. And of course, we'll set you up with all the necessary information about the events coming up. This is the podcast of the Germanic American Institute.
Welcome.
Willkommen.
Where Germanic-speaking European countries...
Germany.
Deutschland.
Austria.
Österreich.
Switzerland.
Schweiz.
Blend with the Midwestern United States.
Hallo. Hallo.
Servus.
Grüezi.
We are here and there, and we invite you to come along on the journey. And the trio is back. This is Günther. Welcome back to yet another episode of the GI podcast here and there. With me at the Damen Salon is our director of comm, Erin Hartz. Erin, good to see you.
Good to see you.
And our brand new director of language services, Caro Blank. Hi, Caro.
Hallo, guten Tag.
And starts us off already in German. This is going to go in an interesting direction. Erin, we do have a couple of new staff members. Let's dive right into that. Who is new? Who are the people going to talk to? Who email in? Who have requests? What are the new faces?
Right. So we had a new office manager join us during COVID. Her name is Casey Horn, and she comes to us from the Children's Museum. She has years of experience working in nonprofits. And we're so excited to have her with us. We call her the office manager, but I feel like she's really the operations manager. She really helps us keep everything running and problem solving and troubleshooting. And you will definitely hear her voice if you call the GAI.
That was sort of an impromptu promotion. Love it.
Yeah.
Totally. Okay, so that was number one. Number two is...
Yeah, and so I'm super excited to welcome Olivia Felland to our team. She is on the development and communication side. She's our new development coordinator. So she helps our team with everything fundraising, with Deutsche Tage, with some of our events, memberships. So if anyone has questions on their membership or if you would like to donate lots of money to the GAI to help us keep our programs going, you will hear from Olivia.
I think we'll talk a little bit about how to keep the programs going in terms of event participation a little bit later down the road today. But number three of our new arrivals and also the now third party in our trio of the podcast, Caro Blank. Welcome to the GI. First time face-to-face.
First time face-to-face.
Yeah.
And I'm really happy to be here in Minnesota, in St. Paul. It's my... fourth week in St. Paul.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I moved here from Chicago. I was working with the Goethe Institute in Chicago for a long time. And now I'm happy to lead the language department here in Minnesota.
The accent is undeniable. I'm hearing it. I can't even overhear that. Where are you actually originating from?
I'm from the region that's called the Saarland. It's the not so pretty border to France. Everybody knows the Schwarzwald, the Black Forest, and on the other side of the Black Forest is Strasbourg. I'm coming from that region where there is a lot of coal mining and steel cooking going on.
Oh.
Not anymore. The opposite of my German region is the Lorraine with Metz and a lot of heavy industrial area.
So the claim to fame of the Saarland was production, actually, then?
It was coal mining and it was steel. And the Saarland was always a part that was fought about in World War I and World War II, that France and Germany were always fighting to get their hands on the big industries in the Saarland.
From a resource perspective, that
yes.
Makes sense. But considering how Germany is, I would say, one of the leading nations globally in terms of alternative energy production, how is it affecting the Saarland right now?
Not really much, because it's a hilly region. We don't have a lot of wind. We don't have a lot of sun. We are in a little rainy valley of big of Europe. It's the heart of Europe next to Luxembourg. And now the Saarland have to restructure. We make wine in the Saarland.
Okay. Important things.
Important things.
Important, yes.
There is a really good Riesling coming from the Saarland.
It's I like where this is going.
Saarhuber Riesling. It's a very dry wine. The Saarland is trying to remodel itself as a tourist region, and we have a high. There's a high number of Guide Michelin restaurants, the closeness to France makes that possible. But the Saarland as a German region is struggling a lot. The population is shrinking. There is older people staying in the Saarland. Younger people go out into the world. Mm-hmm. A lot of unemployment, mm-hmm. and is the poorest Bundesland of Germany.
Really, so even compared to the former East Bundesland?
Really compared to the former East. And there's a big movement that the Saarland should be dissolved and to be put together with the other Bundesland, Rheinland-Pfalz.
Oh, wow.
We're struggling for...
For survival.
For survival, yeah.
Really great lineup of reasons not to visit the Saarland when on vacation, whenever that may happen again. Why should somebody visit the Saarland?
Because of the good wine, a lot of good hiking. It's the Saarland and Rheinland-Pfalz have the biggest forest area in all of Germany. You can walk for 4 days through a forest without meeting anybody, but some Saarlanders.
Sounds almost desirable. Then again, I think we had enough isolation for years to come.
Yeah.
Okay, so from the Saarland now to the GAI, taking over the language department, without diving deep into what happened in between, but let's look forward. What happens actually from here on out, particularly as language learning is concerned, as the department is concerned? You've had the opportunity to get your feet wet now to see how we're doing things. What are your plans with us going forward? One wants to know.
One wants to know. What I found here was an excellent organization of online classes. Like when everybody needed to buckle down and restructure teaching and making teaching an event that happens online, the GII did a really good job to just switch from on-site to online, seemingly painless, but I don't like there was a lot of work that went in that, and I would like to build on that foundation to make the GEI into an institution that can offer a lot of online teaching. I want to maintain that online teaching through COVID and further. And at the same time, I want to have classes on site again.
So sort of a blended
methodology. Yes, I'd like to have a blended system, because we could see that we attract a lot of people from Minnesota who are not able to drive into St. Paul once a week, but we can attract people from Duluth, for example, into online classes. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the way to go in the future. And to really streamline and build more of those online classes.
Has there been any talk of doing, you know, what they call hybrid learning, where it's a mix of online and in-person?
Yes. If we would want to do that hybrid learning, we would need an instrumental online classroom thing that goes beyond Google Classroom.
Yeah, those are available coming from my other job, teaching at a local university. Learning management systems to that degree are available. Of course, it's a cost factor as a nonprofit. This is always, I think, an area of consideration, but probably something we can address and look into. Now, as far as the transition, since you mentioned that earlier, is concerned, I think it was, at least from my perspective, it was really painless. We first went to Google Meet, and that had its growing issues, but not because of us, but because of the limitations that Google actually imposed. So, for instance, breakout rooms were not an opportunity within Google Meet. And then when we switched over to Zoom, I think the experience in and of itself became a whole lot more, I would say, conducive to learning. And from an instructor's perspective, the breakout sessions that are randomized, because usually people gravitate toward one another to work with the same person all the time for the entire 12 weeks. Now, as soon as you randomize and Zoom basically takes over the assignment of breakout rooms, you just get more flavor and just a better experience. And that has really proven to be quite useful. Plus, nobody objects to a 20-second commute from the kitchen to the living room or office.
Right, here you are right in all things you said, and I tried so far four different platforms like the Zoom, Adobe Connect, WebEx, and Big Blue Point, and I'm thrilled with Zoom at the moment, the possibilities we have with Zoom.
Yeah, Zoom has done really a great job, and they've learned a lot. So the future maintains our online presence, but also, of course, given the COVID restrictions and as they lift, bringing people back into the house. And I would say that beautifully segues into what does learning actually look like? From a general perspective, as far as it applies to us at the GAI, but also from your perspective, having been a German teacher for 30 years, where are you at on that? Because I feel a little bit of a, let's just call it a minor dissonance heading our way.
What I've found here, and I'm very aware of that, you talked about German grammar a lot in this trio conversations, is that a lot of people like to focus on grammar as a tool to use the language. And I kind of sometimes grin a bit because you never focus on chemistry in order to bake a cake. You don't take a chemistry class in order to make a cake. So in my experience, more than 30 years now, is like I tried a lot of things in my life concerning language teaching, and I'm very thrilled with a task-based approach to things. What I want to do is I want to make the students talk. I want to make them talk without any fear or pressure to make mistakes or not. Sometimes it doesn't matter if you use the right article as long as the message gets through. Language is a tool that we should use. And so I would really highly encourage students, use it. No matter how good you are in your grammatical approach, try to get your message through.
I'm buying so far. I generally agree with the idea that language, of course, needs to be used to convey its meaning or whatever it is you want to accomplish by the use of words. But my concern in that becomes with German being such a layered language with case structures and not even reflecting on the tenses, but let's just stay in present tense, case structure plus verbs with prefixes and modal verbs and all kinds of options to switch things around and just give it a little bit of a different flavor just by moving one tiny little thing. That is predicated on the idea that I actually understand what I'm doing. And I suppose there are two schools of thought on this. One of which could be that I'm learning through experience by using it, quote unquote, making a mistake, and then figuring out how to do it right, or to learn it right from the get-go and then essentially cement the idea through repetition?
I agree with you on the whole, but learning it from the get-go is, I see kids, they learn German from the get-go when they are growing up in a German environment, no matter if the kids are German or whatever, and they are not aware of grammar. You cannot not ask a seven-year-old, so what is the SPO rule or how do you conjugate a verb? They just use it and they make mistakes. And at one time, they don't make mistakes anymore. And now on a aside, the average German doesn't speak always grammatically correct.
Oh, absolutely not, yeah.
This is the use of language that I have. And then another side thing, German might be a layered language, like you said it, but it's not so special in the world. There are a lot of languages. German is just one of the world's languages that exist. And when I go to high schools today in the United States, teachers tell me, ooh, German is such a complicated language. French is easier than German. And Spanish is even easier than French. Speaking all three of these languages, I strongly disagree.
Okay.
Because German might have a grammar that looks more complicated than Spanish. Spanish has an intonation that looks more complicated than the German intonation. And it's I wanted to take away the fear of German as a complicated, hardly to manage language. This is what I think, because English is such a language that everybody thinks, oh, they can speak English, and I can speak English too. But then in an academic level, it gets really layered and complicated too. So I want to just put German on the same spot like French, Spanish, English, even Chinese is.
Would that hinge on wherever it is you're learning German from to get the level of instruction that simplifies what otherwise could be identified or interpreted as difficult concepts? So for instance,
exactly.
When I look at the idea of the accusative case, we've talked about this before in one of our previous casts with the trio. Go back in our hierarchy, you will find the accusative case. I will not bore you to death with that. But just the idea of breaking down the accusative case takes about, 5 to 10 minutes at the most to really simplify this. How does it apply? How do you use it? Under which circumstances do you use it? How would you use such an idea in task-based learning? Or would you not use it at all and the learner just accidentally figures out that there is now a switch in case structure?
I take my Schnupper course, for example. My Schnupper course that I introduced here and got us students in, my Schnupper course has the topic, we make small talk at a party. And I have 60 minutes in the Schnupper course, and we go through the topics of a small talk party. I introduce myself, I ask how I feel, like, mm-hmm. And I talk about my hobbies, and I tell the other person what my drink is.
Okay.
Those are the four topics. That is called the Aufgabenstellung. And then I have examples. I say, ich heiße Caro. My name is Caro. And I let the students repeat that. Mm-hmm. And mein Hobby ist lesen. Mein Hobby ist kochen. I let them repeat it until they understood it.
Okay.
Ich trinke Wein. Mm-hmm. Ich trinke Bier. I let them repeat it. They get the message immediately. But then there is Wein, and there is beer as an accusativ, right? Mm-hmm. Ich trinke accusativ beer and wine. But I leave off the article first.
Well, you can null article this anyway if you like to.
Ich trinke das Bier, ich trinke den Wein. And after they say, ich trinke das Bier and ich trinke den Wein, and when they can say it, when they can use it, then I go back and ask them, so is it den Wein? Is it their Wein? What do you make of it? I just like they deduct the grammatical structure after they have used it.
So basically, you're reversing the order, of the events. I commonly, for instance, break down the concept into bite-sized pieces. The way I look at learning generally, just from a visualization perspective, is Lego blocks. Every construct is comprised of smaller little blocks, and I can name each block or colorize each block and give it its own meaning within the construct. So I'll take block A and say, okay, this is what this block does, and here's where it belongs. Verb, second position. This is always your red block. This is where it lives. And now we are going on building the sentence, and in terms of accusative, well, am I directly doing something that has an effect? Ich trinke den Wein, right? So yeah. I am drinking the wine. And if that is the case, and the object happens to be masculine, then you have a visible and audible change. And now we're going into practice. So basically, we're just reversing the order.
We do, but if I just have them make the sentences, and I'm going back to my baking example, I have a recipe, I have yeast, and I have sugar, and I have milk, and I make a little thing in the middle of the flour, and I let it... let it rise. I try that with a recipe book, but if somebody says to me, you have to, sugar does this with the yeast. Yeast has this component, and then if this component gets mixed with sugar, the dough should rise. Mm-hmm. I might be afraid I'm making a mistake with the yeast and the sugar.
Yeah, I think... From a student perspective, like when I was learning German, and I will forever be a student of German, honestly.
Although your German is excellent, I just want to throw that in at this point also.
But I feel like the task-based learning, and maybe this is similar, like the dialogues that we did in class, like the play, I feel like it's sort of play acting, right, in a way. Like those I remember, but if I sit down to write a sentence... then that's when, like, the grammar would come in for me.
You said you sit down and write a sentence.
Right.
I'm putting my stress on communication.
Yeah,
like
but
communicate.
Yeah, and I feel like it's learning a language is both. I mean, I'm thinking, like, if I sit down to write an email to my friend or, like, a text message, like, in Germany, that's when, like, the grammar sort of seeps back into my head. But if I'm speaking, I don't think about grammar. Yeah, so...
So basically division of labor here, so to speak. As soon as you speak, you don't analyze what you're actually saying in terms of grammatical structures, but as soon as you actually visualize it by writing it down or typing it into a text field, then you're looking at grammar.
Right, and maybe that's just, you know, personally, that's Aaron Brand. That's not like I'm saying a best practice.
Oh, no, I would say that's very common. Mm-hmm. I have that with English. I still have it with English. And I have, sometimes when it's a really important email, I have our office manager look over it. So this is a thing that wouldn't go away for me either in another language. And... I can totally understand your feeling about that. But if you would go back in your mind and you want to write an email, say an informal email, talk that email louder. Like if you go talk to yourself in your mind and then write down what you said to yourself in German.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what I tell the students on lower levels. And we're we're just talking about lower levels approach of German.
Sure.
Beginner levels.
Okay. It's just like take away that fear of making a mistake. When we get to higher levels, we put the pressure on, of course, with grammar.
Fair enough. So this, I think this, we almost have to leave this undetermined or undecided at the end of the day, because this is a wonderful audience participation kind of question. And with that, I would certainly encourage you, the listener, to email us at podcast@gaimn.org and let us know, would you actually prefer task-based learning or would you prefer grammar learning before using it in a task? I'd be really interested to find out what the responses are, because as far as our teaching methodologies and styles are concerned, that which you need from us really informs how we become more effective. And that's, I think, at the end of the day, really what we're after here.
I strongly agree. Thank you, Günther.
And, you know, I intimately know someone who was in Karol's Schnupperkurs. In fact, my mother participated. And she has tried to learn German before. And she's, you know, she's a professor. She has a very analytical mind. And she's exactly the kind of person that gets stuck on the grammar and wants to do everything perfectly. And she came away from the course being so delighted that she was speaking German. She remembered the phrases that she used. So I feel like I definitely see the merits of that approach in that.
And Dara thought you were my friend.
Oh, no. We voted you off the island. It
just about seems like that. And again, that's fair. I mean, obviously, teaching, learning, and approaches have come a long way. And perhaps just because I'm a fossil in that sense doesn't mean that it's the right approach. But again, this is, I think, really where audience participation comes in play, particularly in the lower levels when fear makes such a strong entrance, if you will, that frequently has then people not coming back and continuing their journey, even though they really have the keys in their hands. And all that's missing now is just to know which door to unlock.
Yeah,
that's exactly right. And I'm a fossil too. For all the listeners, it's like...
Okay, well, that was an interesting sort of getting to know Karol, which, again, this is our first meeting.
I had one more question for Karol. So you had mentioned the other day in Saarland that, you know, you speak like a dialect, or you don't have a dialect because the Saarlanders have like their own language, so to speak. Was that a joke or was that
real? It was no joke. Okay. We have a dialect that is very well mixed in with French, and the pronunciation of the French words happens in German, but people from other, when we really dive deep into our own language, people are left completely puzzled what we said. When we say Shang Shase Mol die Ende aus dem Schadeng.
Say what?
See?
What was
that? Wow.
Tell us. What was
okay, let's try this in High German first and then we'll translate this.
Hannes jag die Enten aus dem Garten.
Okay, so Hannes chased the ducks out of the yard.
Shang Shase Mol die Ende aus dem Schadeng. So we use the word garden, the word jardin en français. Yeah. We use...
I heard ente. Ente, the second time.
this is how a lot of people
speak. Is it called Saarländisch?
It's called Moselfränkisch.
Moselfränkisch, okay.
This is the first time that I actually feel that something is worse or more difficult to understand, perhaps that's a better phrasing, than Swiss German.
And it's like it's dying out, I have to say. We have 1 million people in the Saarland, not more. And then a lot of people, my generation, the fossil that I am, the aforementioned, can speak that fluently, but younger people are not taking that up anymore because it sounds so weird and not cool.
Yeah, we do have something similar in some regions of Austria, particularly going more towards Slovenia, so the southern part of Austria, where there is a mix of Slovenian and German that I think that's really still only spoken by 1,000 people in one particular village, if that. So it's certainly particular regional dialects are slowly going extinct. Okay, good. Erin.
Yeah.
Events.
Yes.
What are we doing?
Excellent.
And
okay.
We know a couple of things are happening in Minnesota. I think we are hitching a ride on those, and we're putting on Deutsche Tage.
Yep.
And yes, a couple of other things. So this is where you have the info.
For sure. And I think the last time we got together and we had our grammar deep dive with Gina, our executive director, she did talk about Deutsche Tage. I think some of the details may have shifted since then. Mm-hmm. So I'll go over that a bit. And then I'd love to turn it to Carol when I'm done so she can talk about our upcoming language sessions and such.
Yeah.
So yes, Deutsche Tage, we are all so excited to have our German Days Deutsche Tage Festival happening on June 12th and 13th on the grounds here at the GAI. Tickets are $5. And so the event is very different this year. Last year, it was a take-home kit only type event, and we had virtual events. In the past, you could just show up. But this year, because of COVID restrictions, you do have to get a ticket for a particular time slot. So we have 3-hour time slots. So on Saturday, June 12th, 12 to 9, and Sunday, June 13th, 11 to 5. And tickets will go on sale, open to the public on our website on May 14th.
And due to spatial constraints, yard size and whatnot, we have a finite number of tickets, I'm assuming?
Correct. It's 250 tickets per slot. Per time slot.
Okay.
So I do think we'll be able to accommodate most people who want to come, but we do have a waitlist functionality if we have to. So
what do we look like in terms of food and drink? Because, you know, Germany, we have food and drink.
So
what does it look like?
Yeah, and I think Gina mentioned this too. Polaner is back. A lot of our favorite food vendors. And we have entertainment, the Bavarian Musikmeisters. We have Ron Mackel on accordion. We have the Alpenstana. So all this information will be on our website. We are still looking for personal sponsors. So if you would like to reserve your time early and get some other perks, you can get an individual sponsorship for $100 or a couple for $150. And so there's some free drinks and other perks in there. Or a corporate sponsorship if you're business would like to sponsor Deutsche Tage, please reach out to me or my wonderful new colleague, Olivia.
During editing, allow me to cut in here real quick with an update. It is Saturday, May 8th. This is the day the episode drops into your podcast player. The actual episode was recorded a few days ago prior to the announcement of Governor Waltz easing the restrictions for masks as well as social distancing guidelines. This, of course, does have an immediate impact, an easing impact on Deutsche Tage and perhaps going forward also onto the Oktoberfest. Now, as with everything, the situation is incredibly fluid and in flux, and it may change on a moment's notice. The best advice that we have for you is just check on our website, gaimn.org, or just simply call us at the house and ask the questions that you would like to have answers for. That's the update. For now, we are looking like we have a much freer Deutsche Tage than we originally anticipated, and we are certainly very much looking forward to welcoming you.
On May 8th, we have baking with Helga, two iconic German cakes, die Schwarzwalder Kirschtorte and Apfelkuchen.
Well, I'll be here for that.
It is online, and if you miss it, we will put it on YouTube after. And then we have a lawn cafe on May 23rd, which is sort of our new cafe and kuchen model under COVID, where you can come enjoy some cake made by the Damen and coffee spaced out on the lawn, Saturday, May 23rd, or that might be a Sunday. At any rate, it's on May 23rd.
And you know I can't resist. I have to ask about the Oktoberfest because we know that the Munich Oktoberfest for 2021 has already been canceled. I just actually heard this earlier. And my surprise, I can't even adequately describe. I mean, that's back-to-back. That has never happened before, ever.
Yeah.
So that is certainly concerning. We are going in a little bit of a different direction, I suppose, really looking towards what happens at the state fair. Where are we at on this?
Right. I think we're still planning. It's more of a save the date type stage. Mm-hmm. And I also believe that Oktoberfest would take place on the at the house,
okay,
the grounds. But all of that is in flux. So we encourage everyone to follow us on social media, check back with our website, or, of course, keep listening to this podcast every week.
That was a great plug. I love it. Thanks. Anything else that we have coming up, or should we talk about task-based learning?
Yeah, no, we could. I'd love to hear more from Caro about summer camps and particularly the teen offerings, I think, are really interesting and new this year.
Thank you. The task-based learning goes towards the summer camps, where we have still openings for the little gardeners that they learn gardening and German at the same time. The pirate voyage is still on. And, of course, Kinder lernen Deutsch. Like, this is the summer camp where we try to get the little ones interested in Deutsch. And we do it in a very playful thing. And we have still slots for the 4 to 6 year olds and for the 7 to 10 years old. And then what's really close to my heart, we offer the first time teen camps. The first teen camp is the week of June 21st to 25th, and the topic is racism in Germany and here. We would like to introduce the kids of a concept of me and the other in these camps, and we have a camp on environmental issues in Germany and here at the end of August. These are both teen camps for people between 14 and 18 years old, and they're all day camps. Like, the young people would be here from 10 to 4 o'clock working with hands-on on this really touchy subject.
And I think we do have a podcast planned that goes in the same direction, if I'm not mistaken, right?
We do, yeah. So, I mean, we absolutely here at the GAI want to join the conversation about, you know, our country's reckoning with our history, you know, with everything that's going on with, you know, fighting systemic racism in our society. And I think it'll be an interesting conversation. And I appreciate Caro for organizing the camp and also, you know, speaking with us in a couple of weeks on it. Yeah.
This is going to be a very, very interesting conversation. But I'm still stuck on one thing that you said regarding kids and gardening and doing so in German. Gotta admit, this is actually quite fascinating. So you are learning a task-based skill in the open, doing something of perhaps future value. And you're doing it in German.
We don't expect the kids to be fluent in German.
Okay.
So, we like, everybody can enroll in the class.
Right.
Like, they don't need to be fluent in German. They don't need to speak German at all. They would learn it through the group, through their peer group. It's all about an exchange of kids in different languages.
Now, the million-dollar question... Can they bring mom and pop or grandma and grandfather? Because I think that would also be quite interesting to just have a generational meddling here.
That would be a good idea for next year.
Cool.
I will think about that. That it's like, as far as now and with the COVID restrictions,
yeah,
the parents can drop off the
right
kids and they have awesome to leave. This is a restriction we have now.
Sure.
Because of Corona, but to have a multi-generational summer camp is a really good idea. I will note down for next year.
Can't believe I'm buying into task-based. Here we go. Slowly being converted. I think that, I mean, is that all we had?
Yes, that is I've checked everything on my list. Oh, we do have the summer classes starting. For those of you, I'm a planner, so I want everyone to plan. Be like Aaron, make a plan, make a schedule. When are summer classes starting?
Our summer classes will start July 12th and go through August 30th. And the registration will be open beginning mid-May. We do experiment with on-site classes, and we will, of course, everything will be happen online too, and that will be fun classes. We review everything we learned in the semester before. We do conversation. We try some pronunciation skills like Eichhörnchen.
I love that.
And we write each other little postcards in the classes, and we learn a lot about German culture.
Last year's summer, I taught a grammar class. Never mind.
That is the postcard class now that we write each other postcards.
All right.
That's lovely. Yeah.
Okay, well, cool. That's, I suppose, it. Caro, welcome to the trio.
Thank you.
Good to have you here, also not just in the trio, but also, of course, at the GEI. And Aaron, as always, thank you so much.
Thanks. Thanks for having us.
And, of course, the open call goes to you. If you have any suggestions, questions, future topics, or tasks that you think are worthy of being noted, just send us an email, podcast@gaimn.org. This is Günther. Thanks for tuning in. Until next time.